I know this guy, he's connected.
They come around, but they never come close to. By Lord, that's not a metaphor. They come around, but they never come close to. By Lord, that's not a metaphor. They come around, but they never come close to. By Lord, that's not a metaphor. They come around, but they never come close to. By Lord, that's not a metaphor.
First one, let me tell you how I feel about these stupid motherfuckers that be claiming that they're real.
What?
Fuck y'all, you don't know about me. Tryna take my G, life force energy.
When will this warfare stop?
Everywhere I go in the city, I see corrupt cops. They don't change, they run every lane. Fucked up in the brain, tryna crack cocaine. And it's a shame, all I do is complain about the evil politicians, all the food and the rain. I'm new to the fame, true to the game, losing my brain. I maintain with drugs through my veins, soothing the pain. I'm used to
to listen to another episode of Hacker Voice Radio, your independent free speech media source. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hacker Voice Radio. You are listening to us on the 11th of April 2006. Are you ready? Well, it appears you are. Good afternoon. There, Planet Lave.
Hello.
How goes it, sir?
Not bad, not bad at all. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Could be better. Could be worse.
Could be better, could be worse.
I mean, I could be dead, and all you'd hear is, we could be very quiet.
Yeah, true.
Just a bit of Zerl in the background. So, it's a Tuesday, and as promised, we have our Tuesday Tech Day, which is going to be dedicated for teaching you, or at least attempting to talk about something technical on the lines of computer and hacking and security and all this kind of crap. Last time it was about the Windows networking. This time I will be attempting to describe what encryption is and how it does it and what you use it for and how to break it and all this kind of stuff. Right, if we start off with a basic explanation of what encryption is, you know, everybody should know what it really is meant to be doing or what it's what generally you're trying to do with encryption. Encryption is the method of transmitting a message, but only so that one or the recipients or recipient know what the message is and nobody else has a fucking clue. That's basically the idea of encryption. There's various ways of obtaining a secure connection using various methods in the computer sense. Now, I'm sure everybody's quite aware of SSL, which is basically a secure standard or secure method of encrypting web pages or websites on the internet. SSL stands for Secure Sockets Layer, and it works on the basis that, for example, if you are putting something on the World Wide Interweb, you would need to send out your credit card information over the internet. If you're talking directly out to the web, and no one has kind of, nobody is even eavesdropping in between the transmission, then you're pretty much okay. But you should never rely on just thinking that everything will be fine, because at the end of the day, somebody could possibly be spoofing or somehow listening in to what you're talking to the server. So somebody could be on your network, or plugged into your hub, or plugged into your, you know, listening out with the wireless line to your unencrypted messages that are being transmitted. Now, the second condition of this would also be that this is also one-way authentication. Your assurance that the remote site is legitimate, and the second is to provide the encrypted communication for the transmission link. So this is basically what SSL does. And you have two, basically, fallbacks without SSL, is that you don't know that possibly somebody else could be listening to your conversation, and secondly, you don't know that the site that you're actually viewing is really the site that you're meant to be viewing and isn't something else. Now, basically, your web browser uses a Kerberos-style authentication method, and this won't work with websites. So, Secure Socket Layer has been developed to basically give websites a chance to be able to authenticate themselves by a given method. Now, Netscape actually developed or promoted the technology Secure Sockets Layer and solved this problem. And SSL security takes place at a very low network level, and can be used to protect almost any type of transaction, as in something is being done on that pipe, on that line. But the largest use of SSL is on the web, and this is because it's built into Netscape Navigator and almost any other web browser like Microsoft IE and everything like that. Now, the way SSL works is that it uses a public key encryption method plus a certificate from a trusted third party, or third, like a certificate authority, to ensure that the legitimate distribution of public, to ensure that the distribution of these public keys is correct, and somebody hasn't just said, right, well, I'm going to be a trusted third party, and yeah, he's fine. So you have these bodies in place that actually deal with the method of selling, which in a way is what happens, these public keys. And also for efficiency, once the bona fide individuals are established, a randomly chosen session key is basically exchanged between you and the website, and for an efficient symmetric encryption of a remainder of the transaction is carried out. So basically the way that SSL works is that your browser contacts a website, which sends back its certificate, which then has been encrypted with the trusted third party's private key. Since you know the trusted third party's private key, your browser decrypts the certificate it receives from the web server with it. Successfully decrypting this means that the certificate was originally encrypted by the third parties whom you trust. Inside the certificate is a description of who the web servers you're contacting really belongs to, along with the web server's public key. Your browser will let you look at the certificate if you really want, and you can actually do this by either right-clicking on the little little key symbol in Firefox or whatever, and going through and reading this stuff. It's quite interesting, actually. Your browser uses this public key to then encrypt a session key, which it then sends back to the server. The server receives your request, and of course, it is the only possessor of its private key, so the only legitimate server that can decrypt the key you just sent is itself. At this point, the browser and the web server, which you know is legitimate, share a session key, which you can now use to encrypt further telecommunications, which is great. So that's basically how SSL works. And, you know, this whole kind of encryption stuff is actually quite immensely complex when you get down to a mathematical sense. But what can really fascinate people is how quickly this stuff actually works and how it's carried out in the space of, you know, literally a fraction or a couple of seconds. Now, I just want to talk about a bit about Kerberos authentication. Kerberos is a secure authentication client server system that works over a distributed insecure network. It was developed at MIT as part of a project Athena, and is named after the three-headed dog in that guarded the gates of Hades. Kerberos is an authentication scheme strictly limited to secure authentication, which means that providing who you are is the distinction from authorization, which is a decision based on the authenticated identity, whether to grant permission to a service, which is quite complicated because authentication and authorization are two different things here. Use Kerberos when you need to use a remote service from a file server or a print server, for example. Or you could just log into a remote machine. The Kerberos server maintains a secure database with lists of people and of valid registered services with each of their own secret keys, or to use a more familiar term, a password. The Kerberos server acts as a trusted third party. Now, if we remember about SSL, that works, verifying both your and the remote server's identity with anyone sending their password over the network. And Kerberos server also produces a shared secret key, session key, that you and the remote server can use to secure your communication during that session. Let's say you want to use a print server to print something. You send a request to this Kerberos server for a Kerberos ticket for the print server. The Kerberos server generates a session key for you, and then it encrypts a session key using your personal password, which it finds in its identity password tables based on who you are and who you say you are. It encrypts the session key along with your name twice, first using the print server secret password, again from its own tables it has, and then encrypting the result in the second time using your password. The Kerberos server then sends the two encryption items back to you as your initial Kerberos ticket, and because both parties of the Kerberos ticket are encrypted using your Kerberos password, only you, well, really only someone who has your password can then decrypt them. Decrypting the first part of the ticket gives you your copy of the session key. You keep that, and then decrypting the second part of the ticket gives you the session key and identifier string, which is still encrypted for the print server with the print server's secret key or password. You then send that to the printer. After the print server decrypts the second part of the ticket with a secret password, both you and the server will process the shared secret key and the second session key, and the distribution process has entered that and the distribution process has ensured that both you and the print server are authenticated with one and each other, and now the print server knows who you are and then decides on its own basis whether to accept or deny your request to print. But its authorization, as I said before, is completely different. As I said, Kerberos is one mug the fucking beast of an encryption system, and guess which operating system or which environment of operating systems loves and tends to use this quite a lot? Well, it's actually Windows. Windows authentication systems and network domain authentication systems are actually based on this method of Kerberos authentication. And it's one of these things that I had to actually learn to do when I was doing various things. So there you have two authentication methods described and how they work. Is everybody still alive?
Still alive, man.
Yeah. So, let's move on to the good, juicy stuff. Some little bit of PGP. PGP stands for Pretty Good Privacy. It's used for standard mail internet use. It has no built-in security. It's quite reasonable. This is quite reasonable, given that there is no way to know beforehand who to trust, but it's no good when you want to send a sensitive message. Enter Phil Zimmerman, the author of Pretty Good Privacy, aka PGP, shareware for the private use program that uses efficient and secure combination of symmetric and asymmetric encryption for effectively sending a plain text file or message in symmetrically encrypted fashion using randomly selected secret session key. And for security, the session key itself is encrypted separately with the public key of the person who will receive the file. Both the encrypted ciphertext and the encrypted session key are sent to the recipient. To recover the file, the recipient decrypts the session key with his or her private key and then uses the session key to decrypt the ciphertext. You can run PGP as a standalone program, decrypting a file before you attach it to an email address, to an email, or even encrypting sensitive files in your personal computer. Or it can be integrated into into email software like Outlook and various other forms like that. And this is very, very straightforward. PGP is most important feature besides being perhaps the most widely used privacy enhancement to mail applications is that it doesn't depend on the trusted third parties such as a Kerberos server. PGP assumes that you already have the public keys of the person that you're corresponding with to get these public keys across. However, you can directly from a friend or from a website, you can find these things out. There's actually like these weird geeky things that happen, which is like signing parties where you go around and make signing other people's PGP keys. And as long as you know somebody's public PGP key and you are sure that that person is that person who has signed that PGP key, can PGP really work? So now we know a little bit about how these different methods work. Let's talk a little bit about how we'd go about actually attacking this and poking some holes in this. Now, there's various ways whereby you can actually passively attack an encryption method. So let's take PGP as an example because it is so widely used. The various attack methods are basically, as listed, keypress snooping, Van X snooping, memory space snooping, disk cache snooping, and packet sniffing. So, keypress snooping is simply keylogging. Somebody can install a keylogger and capture passphrases On the unwary target, there is no crypto analysis whatever necessary. It can be done in a very short space of time, and you completely bypassing the whole encryption method, making it 100% completely useless. But this is very easily done in Windows. However, keeper snooping under Unix is a bit more complicated, as root access is needed, obviously unless the target has entered their passphrase from the next window GUI. Van X snooping is that every computer monitor emits visual radiation. This radiation can be captured remotely. If done the right way, the image can be shown on the computer and can be reconstructed remotely. This allows an attacker to observe whatever is going on the victim's computer. The relevance to PGP is obvious, that the threat is real. Snooping a passphrase from the keyboard and even a whole message from the screen are viable attacks. The attack, however exotic it may seem, is not beyond the capability of anyone with some technical know-how and the desire to read somebody's PGP encrypted files. And yes, there is quite a few video stuff somewhere around the web about this VanX stuff. If you're interested in finding about this, because it's really quite cool and how it's done, go Google for VAN space ECK. Sorry, it's a fantastic piece of fucking around with technology I've seen for a long time. And another thing I mentioned was memory space snooping. A multi-user system like Unix, the physical memory of the machine can be examined by anyone with the proper privileges, usually somebody who's root. In comparison with factoring a huge composing number, opening up the virtual memory of the system, seeking a user's page and directly reading it is trivial. So you can literally see what's actually happening on the disk by pulling up this, basically like a memory dump, and then working out what's happened in that space of time that the actual codes or the actual memory dump has changed. Disk cache snooping is in multitasking environments such as Windows, the operating system has a nasty habit of paging the contents of memory to a disk, usually transparently to the user. However, it feels the need to free up some random access memory, RAM. That's probably because Windows doesn't use RAM correctly. This information can sit in the clear in the swap file for varying lengths of time, just waiting for someone to come along and recover it. Again, in a network environment where machines access can be done relatively simply, this can be stolen without the user's consent or absolute knowledge. So you can shift somebody's swap file and see what's in there and work out which part contains their passphrase or PGP encrypted files. Packet sniffing is one of the final stages or key stages of attacks of these nature, for many of you that don't know, communication through TCP/IP networks and most likely on local area networks takes place by transmitting packets of information. In most networks, every computer can capture all traffic of all other computers, because the packets are broadcast all over for the other computers. Packet sniffing implies that the process of capturing certain packets that smell interesting. If you use PGP on a host which you can access remotely, you can be vulnerable to this attack unless you use some sort of session encryption utility such as SSH, DES login, or some other sort of network protocol like IPsec for protocol stack encryption. So end-to-end or link-by-link, you are sending your passphrases and messages across in the clear. A packet sniffer can sit and basically just jump between those two points and capture everything that's happened during that time, and hence, in real time, be able to see your passphrase. And I think that kind of rounds it up as far as the practical application and simple attacks of encryption go. So yeah, I'm done.
That's some cool stuff, man.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah.
Cool. I hope everybody else did. So, I guess we've done that, and it's about, took about half an hour, didn't it? So we got another half an hour to talk about anything, and a bit of news, and yeah. So is there any part of that I didn't make clear, or that you didn't understand, or that you want to hear more about, or just want me to shut up?
No, I think you did it pretty well, mate.
Cool.
I liked it anyway.
But then again, you like anything I say.
Oh, stop it. Thing for me is, it's always hard for, to know where to start with these topics.
Yeah.
When people say they want more technical content, where the hell do you start? And where the hell do you end?
Mm.
You know, as encryption, for example. That's a massive topic.
Sure.
I think you did really, really well there. You covered a lot of the kind of regularly used examples of encryption. So you made it about how people are most likely to come across it. But encryption itself, it can go back to, like, I think the Romans and the Greeks, and then it can go far into the future, into methods they're thinking about putting in, and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I did another talk about encryption, and I did basically, like, the kind of bare bones of it and how it works and the history of it, like, you know, the Caesar cipher and stuff like that. And this is, I just wanted to have like a practical side of application to it. Obviously, this is the kind of day-to-day use of encryption, like Kerberos and SSL and PGP, which are really the kind of three key points of any kind of communication and of a secure nature. You know, Kerberos is really Windows-based. It's widely used on the Windows infrastructure, network infrastructure. So let's say you had a remote user that was that had remote access privileges, kind of dialed in from home. They would need to be authenticated somehow, and the only way they can be authenticated is by a Kerberos server giving them a ticket, as I explained how it works, by passing that, encrypting it with the person's password. The only way it can know its password is having a list, which is quite interesting. So it has a list. It then obviously needs to talk to a domain controller, get the list of that specific username and password, and then encrypt that ticket, encrypt that session key with the session key of where it's meant to go, and then it just kind of jams these two things together and spits out a ticket for the session. You know, it's really difficult to explain these things vocally.
Yeah, over radio.
Yeah. Because I have the tendency to try and draw a diagram or you know, it's much easier. I don't know, my brain works visually, so it'd be very good to just be able to, you know, say, right, well, if you do this and you draw a little, you know, person here and stuff like that, and it's much easier to understand when you have it in front of you in text or in a diagram form, obviously, than it is to talk over a radio show. And also, you know, you tend to bore people when you start talking about, you know, session keys and encrypted layers and stuff like that.
Well, I think you're right. It is a very difficult topic to talk about through audio.
Yeah.
Speaking as someone who's learnt through these Cisco courses and things like that, I've often sat there and the instructor's been talking, mm-hmm. and I've had such a weird, confused look on my face of just desperation. And he's going, oh, yeah, it does this, and then you get the session key, and then you do that, and this encrypts it, and it sends it over there. Simple. And everyone else goes, ah. I'm sitting there going, what? I don't know what you're talking about. And the guy will bring up a slide, a slightly animated one. He'll go, right, it starts here, it does this to here, and then Bob talks to Jane.
Yeah.
Little things like that that's always used.
Yeah.
And I'm suddenly going, ah, simple. But yes, yeah, audio alone is a very difficult medium to teach people things like this, I think.
Well,
but yeah, that all sounded really cool, mate.
Yeah, I hope I managed to get this stuff across and to people that didn't know it. Hopefully, they learned something from it. You know, it's quite difficult to do it, but hopefully, if you did learn something, then fucking great. And if you didn't, then hopefully you understand some of the possibilities of how it works, and you can take it upon yourself to take some further study. You know, at the end of the day, just by listening to this episode of Hackavish Radio doesn't make you an expert in encryption.
Hell no.
You've got to, you know, if you really want to get into it, you've got to take it upon yourself to basically do it. The reason why I know a bit, I don't know everything, nobody knows everything, but I know a bit about encryption and how it works is because I used to play a lot of puzzles and games when I was younger, and you make your own ciphers and you make your own factories. That's what, you know, I like to call it, is that you have a number factory. You know, you have something go in, you know, you have effectively what's kind of the jargon terminology for it is plain text goes into an algorithm process and comes out as ciphertext. And in that mid place, there's something that happens either, you know, symmetrically or asymmetrically to make this encryption process possible. And the simplest form is with a key method, such as, you know, you have something go in, like let's say the alphabet, and if you're using substitution encryption, whereby you substitute every letter with a number, so A becomes 2, C B becomes 3, C becomes 4, D becomes 5, and so on. Obviously, the key for this is 1, because to get the ciphertext back to plain text, you have to deduct each number by 1 to be able to get back onto the table. So what the person would have to know to decipher this is the algorithm used, such as the substitution method process, and the key that was involved in generating this ciphertext. Obviously, if you're doing this by hand, it takes an immensely long time, and you can only make the most simplest forms of encryption by hand, and I'm talking simplest as in it would take you a year to make something like 1 to 8-bit PGP. That could be, you know, I don't know how much of a mathematician you have to be, but, you know, kids can do this stuff, and then, you know, an adult can break in a matter of hours. But it just shows you how fucking awesome it is to have a computer, because all this number crunching and all these prime numbers and all this stuff is being crunched up in literally matter of fractions of seconds. And I think people take it for granted. That's why I have such a passion for this stuff and possibly go on about it too much, is that it is really awesome what's actually happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's quite a lot of applications to it, I'll talk more about that later sometime. You know, I don't know, next week, I don't know if somebody else wants to take charge of the Tech Tuesday, which I guess I'll coin the term for it. And if anyone listening is passionate about any subjects and technology and wants to describe it's in any form of detail of how it works and what it is and whatever, for educational purposes, and educating the listeners and themselves and everything like that, do go ahead and email me or post something in the forums, and let us know that you want to be on the show next week, Tuesday, for the Tech Tuesday Spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, moving on to emails. I've got an email in from Hyper about Birmingham. Hyper says, just a quick update so you can let everyone know on the show. I've found a nice 15-seater minibus to pick up, and they are waiting for a payment from which will... from which I'll sort out hopefully tomorrow. The bus cost £250, so we need to find out how many people are going and kind guess how many people might go, as if there are only 8 or something, I'll cost a few extra quid. And as some of our members are either unemployed or students, 31 plus, fuel and drink money will be a bit much. If we don't get the numbers up, we'll be better just to get a coach, as it'll only cost us £21 each. There is a hostel in the centre of Birmingham where people who want to stay can. It's £17 a night, which is nice. Well, we would also like to hear from anyone who actually lives in Birmingham or knows it well, so they can suggest some stuff to do and places to go during the day, as well as nosing at the anchor sites. I kind of wondering if we do get the bus, maybe Mr. Six can suggest somewhere to park it out of town a bit, maybe as a maybe his front lawn. Anyhow, mate, any suggestions on how we can push this? Well, from the back and with your back straight.
That's it's that kind of bus. No petrol.
Yeah. That's kind of how we generally push a bus.
How many people do we have actually confirmed? I don't think we've actually confirmed anyone, have we?
No, we've... No,
we've had people vote for it on the forums, but no one say, I'm definitely in.
I don't think you can definitely confirm anything in life, but I'm thinking about 11 people have definitely confirmed that they're coming. Most of them are actually us, but I don't know. It's just a case of actually, I think the biggest number of people that will turn up would possibly be at the next month, 2600. I've told everyone this month, I'll tell everyone in the mid-month, and then again at the final 5th May meeting, just to say, you know, we're doing this tomorrow. If you're interested, bring, you know, I don't know, £25 or whatever, how much it will be tomorrow, and you'll get on the bus with us.
I don't know, I think you need people in advance to confirm and commit to it.
Well, I mean, I've already been telling people, and people have said, yes, I'd love to do it, you know, and... it's a case of, like, we need to know if people are going to do it, then where are they going to go? Because you can't say, well, do you want to go? Yes. Well, okay, confirm now that you can go, but then they don't know where they have to meet us, sort of thing, if you see what I mean. And we can't say, well, we'll be there, so you have to arrive, but we don't know how many people will go, so we don't know if we can actually do it, if you see what I mean. So it's like catch 2022. But I'm sure it'll plan out well anyway in the end, because there's been quite a lot of interest in this from various members, like, you know, Reverend Rat and everybody else, and they're all willing to chip in a bit of money and get the ball rolling on that kind of side of things.
Yeah, your problem with the Catch-22 situation there is all you've got to do is break it. Just yeah. move forward and say, right, we're meeting from position X.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know London very well at all, so I'm just going to say Euston Station.
Yeah. No, don't say that.
I'm an out-of-towner.
Yeah.
So you pick a neutral point and say the bus is going to be there. At this point, who's in?
Yeah, yeah.
Sign up now. Exactly. Put your money in now to guarantee me. Your place. And so we all send the checks in.
To me.
Yeah, you'd love that.
Yeah.
We all send the checks
right
in.
Now, yes, that'd be nice.
If you send your check in, that guarantees you a place.
Well.
You know, to Hyper.
All it guarantees is that you've just sent your check in. Is like that you don't have £25.
It's a big scam. But once we've got 10 checks, then we'll know we've paid for it.
Yeah.
You know. And then we can go to the meeting the night before and say, look, if anyone wants in for 10 quid, something like that, come on, we're leaving tomorrow.
Sure.
But if we're doing it the night before, then I think a lot of people will wake up with a hangover and say, can't be
bothered. Yeah, yeah. Mm. So I guess. Yeah, I guess we've got to say, right, this is where it's going to happen, and it's going to happen, you know, at that time. And if Hyper wants to set that out.
He has done so much good work on this. Yeah. I think he should have the final say on what the prices are.
Precisely, and, yeah. And I think he should.
Where we meet.
He should definitely. You know, people can suggest, you know, I can suggest, well, a good place to park the fucker would be there. And if everybody meets us there, and you know, we can see. And I'm sure Hyper knows good places where to do this. So if we have word from him, and this is in reply to your email, Geezer. Let us know basically where we can actually do this thing, and so we got a place to say, right, if you want to do this, we'll be there and there at this time, give us the money now and turn up, and we can then drive you to Birmingham. So so that's
just break the deadlock.
Precisely,
you know.
Yeah.
And if as you were saying there, if anyone knows a good place in Birmingham to park a minibus, please, for the love of God, tell us. We don't want this thing clamped.
No. Well, it will definitely be unclamped within a very short space of time, seeing as it's carrying a group of hackers.
Everyone will just see it as a problem that has to be solved.
Yeah, and approach it at like 10 different sides, and like within a couple of seconds, this thing is like, it's been unbolted to its original fucking manufacturers. Like, its raw materials have been, you know, weighed and separated chemically.
And melted down and built into a laptop.
Yeah. Into a small fridge. Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. So, anything we've got in the news to kind of roll over to till the end of the show, because we're sort of running out of time?
I can speak slow.
Yeah.
If that helps. LucasAid's put some new stories up to date, as he always does.
Yes.
There is no stopping this man. And I'm quite touched, because the top news story he's put, or the first news story.
Yeah.
Is I feel it's to do with me.
Oh.
Oblivion ships more than 1.7 million copies on the PC and Xbox 360. Let's run through the blurb. Take-Two, the UK publishers of Grand Theft Auto, have helps if I actually read out the words on the screen. Okay. Take-Two, the UK publishers of Grand Theft Auto, have confirmed that it has shipped more than 1.7 million copies of The Elder Scrolls IV, Oblivion, into the UK and US homes for the PC and Xbox 360. It was launched last month. The news makes the game the biggest selling title on Microsoft's next generation console, the Xbox 360, so far, suggesting that gamers want slow-burning RPGs rather than high-speed racing games. Now, as regular listeners will know, I'm a big fan of this game, and a big RPG fan, despite me slightly dissing it. But one of the things in this story is they're drawing conclusions on what the Xbox 360 users want. And it's still very early days for the Xbox 360. A lot of the crap that's out there for the 360 is exactly that. It's crap. It's sequels. Yes. It's more racing games. It's more fighting games. Reinventions. Sorry?
Reinventions.
Yeah, yeah. It's stuff you can get on the PC, basically.
Yeah.
And Oblivion kind of fits in with it. So, I haven't really seen a killer app for the 360. If Oblivion was only available for the 360 and not the PC, I'd probably get a 360. It's that good. But yeah, they're saying, what do you do? Let's get more RPGs on the 360.
Yeah.
Because that's obviously what they want. It's not really that. It's just that the competition that is available on the 360, the other titles, this is just this is one man's opinion, but the other competition out there is just shite. So a killer game comes along and it just stands head and shoulders above the rest. I think that is actually what's happening.
Hmm. Well, I kind of silenced in this part because I really can't comment about the whole gaming thing without too much, so yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, all I've seen on the 360, I really want one, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Just because it looks cool and it's kind of sexy.
Yeah.
And I have to keep tearing myself away from the shop and not giving them my money.
Yeah.
And I keep saying to myself, 50 quid is too much for a game.
Oh, yeah.
I won't cross that line.
Yeah. God, you know, I mean, they've been charging slowly, more and more and more for these games. And
slowly, catchy monkey.
Come on, fucking 50 quid for a game.
It's too much.
You've got to be kidding me. And have you noticed, I don't know if you remember if you ever played a game called Silent Hill. It's a... PlayStation game. It's a horror game. Game, first time that ever really used lighting effects to basically create a more kind of frightening atmosphere. There is a movie coming out shortly. I think it's coming out the 27th of April, 2006, entitled Silent Hill, They Know You're Coming, or something like that, I don't know. But it's based on they can hear you from a mile away. Bloody hell!
They can hear you coming.
So loud. So it's weird how like Final Fantasy. There's a movie made for that. Resident Evil movie made for that. Silent Hill movie made for that. But Resident Evil and Final Fantasy were like popular games from the start to the end. They never dropped popularity, you know. Like Resident Evil, fucking yeah, awesome game. Every single money spin-off that they made, I guess, was awesome. I'm not a Nintendo kind of person, but I guess people love them. Final Fantasy, awesome game, fun to play, takes a fucking long time, but there was no drop in popularity. It just got better and better. Silent Hill made one game, fantastic, super fucking scary, and then just dropped off the face of the earth. They made a couple of games under the Silent Hill title, but they were a piece of crap. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, this movie comes out. Very weird. Don't know how to explain that.
They're just cashing in on any old license that they think will sell.
Possibly.
I mean, they did Alone in the Dark with Christian Slater in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever play Dungeon Siege on the PC a few years ago?
I played Dungeons and Dragons, but not Dungeon Siege, no.
Dungeon Siege was a really good RPG that came out, I don't know, early 2000s. Had a really cool feature where you never see a loading screen. So it's a massive 3D world, and you're constantly travelling through it, and it's always loading what's going to happen next. It's really clever stuff, as I understand it, anyway. They're making a movie on that, which is a basic, pretty generic RPG.
Yeah.
You start off as a farmer bloke, and some people get killed, and then you take your crappy wooden sword and you stab a couple of orcs, and then you get a steel shield and a steel dagger or something, and then you get a bit tougher, and then you kill some bigger orcs, and then you kill some other things, and you get tougher and tougher.
That must be like the most boring fucking movie ever.
If it's based on the RPG, then the movie should be 50 hours long.
Yeah.
And very slow. Keeps having scenes where you fill up your loot bag and then go back to the shop and buy some more pickaxes and stuff like that. How can you make a movie based on an RPG?
Yeah.
I don't see it. But it's got Burt Reynolds in it.
Right. I guess you've got to fucking love RPGs to make a movie out of an RPG. Or be like on some weird kind of crack.
I think you just got to be messed up in the head. It's that bloke who does all the computer game to movie things. U-Ball, I think his name is.
Right.
Strange name. There's a lot of shit movies.
Mm.
But this is based on a Dungeon Siege kind of thing.
Right.
Don't think it's going to work.
No.
Just like the rest of his stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's basically people cashing in on any kind of license that the average cash holder will recognise and go, "Oh, I'll go see that," and then get ripped off. Give it a couple of years, there'll be Pac-Man the movie, something like that.
That's something I might pay to watch.
A big yellow ball has to kill ghosts, otherwise the world ends.
Yadda 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 yadda. That would be an awesome movie.
One of these days.
Well, they made Tron, you know. Tron was based on Tron. I guess.
Well, Tron was Tron.
Yeah.
The movie.
Tron was Tron, the game Tron. That was made into the movie Tron. That then.
Bollocks.
That then spawned all the, well, Space Invaders, Tron stole that, with those huge fucking spaceships that look like Lego bricks. You've watched Tron, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, thank God for that. Whew, I was getting worried there.
But the movie came first.
No, Tron the game must have come after, because there was like Tron, the little snake things where you go around and then you like try and block off the other person so that they smash into your tail. Well, I'm going to have to Google this after the show because I know I'm right.
We're going to have to settle this off air.
Yeah, definitely. And talking about off air, we're just about...
Which came first? We're just about?
We're just about out of time, so... So I'm going to end it on some zeal, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the little Tech Tuesday. If not, then fuck you.
If not, come on next week
and
show
do
us
something.
Stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to contribute, then just, you know, fucking do it by the means of whichever way necessary.
We've got email, we've got forums, we've got IRC, you can dial in. Jesus Christ, we can't have many more options. If we haven't got an option that you need, tell us and we'll find a way of getting you on the show.
Yeah.
Join us.
That was spooky. And on that, on that clannish kind of ending, take the pills at midnight, remember. Anyway, good night.
Ta-ta.
Get all that kicking like a criminal.
We should defend ourselves.
I'm making a case to destroy a system based on class, religion, and race. Democracy for a few. The world's full of space as we stew. Urban based, real justice is just a flavor we never get to taste. We run like rabbits in a fox chase. Our efforts consistently misplaced. We're facing incoming violent storms. Can capitalism ever be reformed? Can we make change by just signing forms? I only wish my words could keep people warm. For peace and change, you see I'm torn. If the people are sheep, then it's time they're shorn. In anomic bliss, we stagger through life simply missed. On this class life we grist. Don't have dark skin and fly, cause you're at risk to be harassed and frisked. How long will we fence sit and watch the poor dying? To motivate you while I'm trying. Tips program, got our own people spying. The Constitution is being denied. An all-out attack on our rights. It seems they're prying. The Bill of Rights defied. All we did is blink an eye. And now we're the devil's bride.
Today, the lowest level Politico up to the president use another surefire gimmick to guarantee victory.
We worship nothing in this land of idols, and nor will we just stand idle. Spit the bit out, buck the system out the saddle. We won't fight your dirty war, nor your stock market saving battle. No laser-guided bomb doom, another attempt to kickstart an economic boom. No more death for oil, no more Iraqi highway tombs. You must be daft to think that we won't fight against your draft. You better decide now whether or not you'll participate in this patriotic and nationalistic hate. Real American, I'll bear arms against the capitalistic death and drug dealing state. On TV, I watch you beat my others, and they always seem to have the same colors. Jails filled to the rim, just a concrete slave ship full of lower class sisters and brothers. Economic victims in a parallel world, we'd be with them. I'm a steady tossing monkey wrenches in the system. George Bush, hear my holler. We won't take your sword or your dollar.
Today, the lowest level Politico up to the president used another surefire gimmick to guarantee victory. Death.
Testimony. The media's way too phony, too addicted to greed to see any reality but the one we lead. With brute force, we keep the others from what they need. As a matter of course, we won't let the other